Welcome to another episode of Pardon My Enthusiasm, a horror podcast. Film, spooks, controversy, death, and crime, where the eerie is discussed. I'm your host, Damaris Montufar. Today's episode, Dion, the Human Zoo. This case isn't going to be about death or true crime inherently, or at all. It is odd and disturbing at times, but overall, throughout this episode, we will be discussing a little bit of the Great Depression, but not specifically, I guess, but definitely child exploitation and public responsibility. A little bit of non-related banter, I guess. I said I was going to be less all over the place, and I'm not, but for good reasons. I just finished my linguistics final. I've got 4 more weeks just doing like research stuff, and I am done. And then I get to focus a lot of my time onto this because I am taking a break from school. I am not one of those people that can just like go on. I took a break after high school. I'm taking a break after this degree. I'm going to focus on my side projects. I have an embroidery thing I've been working on for a friend of mine, and I'm not done yet. I've got all kinds of sewing projects and knitting projects. Also, I'll have 4 weeks from the time that I finish this last class I have and the Star Trek convention, because here in Germany, shit be under control relatively well, and they have not canceled it, and you bet your shiny behind I am still going to go. Like, unless something explodes. I literally turned in my leave of absence paper thing at work today. I'm very excited. Oh, also, I think I mentioned it already that I'm working again, which is super great. I've been unemployed for a couple of months, and I've really, really missed working. The unemployment was a personal choice, and then COVID hit. Like, I was in the middle of transitioning into I had gotten another job at Starbucks, and I was gonna work there until I found a job that I wanted to have, but I hated it. I was literally there for like 3 days, and I wanted to just like die. So then I was trying to get another job, and then COVID happened, everything shut down and stuff, just snailed. But I'm finally there. I'm having a great time. We'll see how this all works out. I'm getting really personal. Anywho, the past couple of weeks have been a little crazy, but I'm having so much fun. I feel like I'm just so glad I'm not in the States. I'm also like looking to move into a new flat, and I'm just like, bro, I feel so European now. Like, I'm so annoying. I don't want to go back to the States. I mean, I miss a lot of things about the States. HEB, I miss about the States. I miss 24 hours. I miss diners. But let me tell you about how A-okay I am with being without them. If it means I get some of the security that I just feel with living in Europe. Anyway, enough about me, because I don't know why I was like, you're my friend. I had been doing some schoolwork, and I went to the bathroom, took off my makeup because I realized I had it, put on a face mask, and I was like, I'm going to tell them they're my friend. They don't get a choice. You're my friend. We're friends. Okay? Anyway, moving on. Back to my working tone. Please excuse my cat because she's been super attached, so I'm not kicking her out. Ding, ding, ding for you. I was very vaguely aware of the Dion quintuplets. I knew there were 5, and the slightly comical photo of the 5 girls next to their drained mother shortly after birth. I briefly read that the girls grew up in what is described as a human zoo, and since they were babies, it's a baby zoo. But that was pretty much all I knew. All I had. I dug, of course, and now I'm kind of mad. Everything about this is unfair to everyone involved, and yet almost everyone, excluding the Quints, of course, sucks. It's like being on Reddit, like, eesh, guys, just eesh everywhere. Also, I am a Reddit queen now, which is not true, because I actually don't comment that much, but I'm like upvoting everyone because you're all saying great things, great stuff, guys. Am I the asshole? Probably. Personally, well, I do not think children should be overly exposed. I am very, very opinionated when it comes to child exploitation. And I know that a lot of people are just like, oh yeah, you know, don't abuse your kids and post it on the internet, or, you know, hand your kids off to strangers that can abuse them. I'm like, child exploitation, y'all, is so much bigger than that. It's a topic I have researched extensively on that specifically for children born after the boom of the internet, they have no privacy and will experience no self-decoration or crafting their own internet identity. I too have had personal information shared online that I did not approve of, but I grew up with the internet. You know, I'm a kid of the 90s, and like, I remember going to Walmart and getting the little AOL disc and being like, yes, more internet, like just so excited. And my parents got Wi-Fi in their home when I was like 17 or 18. So internet was definitely not something that was for me. Actually, 17 or 18, that already feels like I was pretty young, but it's still kind of old when you think about it. I think I was 17 or 18. I'll be real honest, I'm not even sure. I just remember getting a computer for my 15th birthday. I was super excited. I could not like connect it to the internet because, well, no Wi-Fi. But my parents wouldn't actually let me connect it to it. So I just played Nancy Drew games. I don't know if that says anything about me, but whatever. All the same, I grew up with the internet. A lot of millennials grew up with the internet, but almost anything about you online is said by you. Anything about me online is pretty much by me, the exception of a few things, and I've usually squashed them to some extent. I still remember the creation of my first email address, my MySpace account. Like, these were big feats, you know. My Facebook is my own. Same goes for my Instagram, my Twitter, my Reddit, etc., whatever. I created them. I document what I want about myself, which truly isn't too much. I tried thinking I would like it, posting about my travels. I even considered a blog. I had like a little Instagram where I would post because I go to a lot of graveyards because I'm a little gothy baby. And I was stressed out more than enjoying it. Like, I enjoyed the interactions I had with people, and they'd be like, oh my gosh, so cool, tell me about it. And I'm like, yes, this is where this place is, XYZ. But I just hated it. I hated feeling like I had to post a certain amount, I had to disclose certain aspects of myself to get a following. And I was like, do I want that? Am I the kind of person who actually wants a following? Because that doesn't actually sound like me. It just kind of sounds like, you know, I was moving to Europe. I was excited and I felt like I had to do something with it. And all the same, I don't like sharing myself that way. I have like 5 friends I personally like to reach out to and tell everything to. Sometimes I feel snobbish going to them and telling them about my successes, discussing my travels or whatever. Like, I'm just like poking them on the shoulder and I'm like overloading them. And sometimes, you know, they'll ignore me and I'm just like, oh my God, am I being like a little twat? No, you know, it's maybe, I don't know. I guess they'll tell me if I'm being annoying. I just want them so much a part of my life that even thousands of miles between us, because, oh, hello, cat. Most of my friends are my childhood friends. I have to shove them into my memories, into my experiences in some shape or form. So I don't really post pictures of my trips, of my work, of my family. I share them directly with my people. This is an experience and a choice a lot of children do not have anymore. The parents make Facebook's account. I've seen like kid accounts where like the parent makes like a portfolio thing or something that's attached to the parent one. So when they become of age, it can become theirs. I don't actually know how they work because I don't have one. But, you know, Instagrams, you know, children being used for a quick buck or a rap title. I'm being very condescending. What is my cat doing? Oh my God. Nothing happened. I'm just being annoying. My desk has like a place for a modem. There's not a modem, I guess the computer part, and it does not actually fit the computer we have, so it's just kind of empty, and my cat likes to go in there and scratch, and it scared the living crud out of me. Why'd you do that, girl? Chapel, what is up? You are a nurse. You are above this. Anywho, I am very aggressive when it comes to people exploiting their children on the internet. I'm just like, that's one of those big things, because it just like really begs the questions about like child stars, and I don't even know how to get into. I don't want to get into it because I will get very intense. But overall, kids should be respected like any other living person. They can't inherently give consent, so don't just assume that you have it because you bore them or you're taking care of them. You know, going back to Reddit, you always find people that are just like, it's my right as a grandparent. Well, it's my right as a parent to make them do that. And it's like, no. No, I'm never going to agree with that. And I'm sorry if that offends people. Like, yes, obviously you have a right to some extent, obviously, you know, if you don't agree with your kid getting their ears pierced, I guess don't. Like, it's not a detrimental thing. But you hounding your child that they're going to go to hell for not following your religion, that's pretty messed up. Like, I understand wanting to share that with them, including them taking them to your place of worship, but if they're crystal clear with you about not believing in what you believe in, you're not going to convince them by yelling at them. You're just not. That's not how that works. But now that I've rambled, I mentioned all this because the Dion Quince are literally the longest standing example of child exploitation. While their birth is a miracle, somewhere it was decided they deserved no privacy, that they were too cute or too exceptional, too special to not use as a selling gimmick. With this thicky boy introduction, let's talk about the people involved. I'm sure I've already mentioned this like a bajillion times, but I took French for like 5 or 7 years and you would think I'd be a lot better at it, but I'm not. Anytime I've gone to France, I'm just like I just can't like enunciate and I'm super quiet. And the moment someone's next to me who knows me, that's trying to force me to be in charge of the situation, my partner, I'm just like, I've never spoken French a day in my life. I don't know what's happening. I'm not going to do it. And I just like shut down. I primarily mention this because there are a lot of French words coming up, and, well, I'm gonna goof it up and you can fight me.
Please don't fight me. That would actually, not be very good. So, anyway,
Oliver Edward Dion was born August 27th, 1904, and was an impoverished farmer who married Alzier Legros Dion. Ooh. Alzier was born May 7, 1909, the only female offspring out of seven. At only 7 years of age, Alzier's mother died. And since she's a girl, you get it. She had to take on that role. Cleaning, cooking, being a mother. Alzier raised a very French household and she avoided English at all cost. She was fluent in French and struggled with English, and bro, I'm reverse. We are homies. We are linked. September 25th, 1925, Alzier, 16, and Oliva, 21, were married. They would have Ernest within a year, then Rosemarie, Teresa, Leo, who died of pneumonia as an infant, Daniel, and Pauline. You heard it. 6 births, 5 who survived. Literally months. 4 months after Pauline is when Alzier became pregnant with who we now know to be the Dion Quince. I'm just like so shook. Like, I get it. It's a completely different time. That's like over 100 years ago when like her life began, what she was raised into. But I'm just like, bro, that's 6 births, 5 active babies. And 5 more. Like, I get that they didn't do it on purpose, but I'm just like, bro, I want to know what's happening. I'd like to get into Alzier a little bit more, though. She was a family woman, if not obvious by the many, 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 many children. But she was also a God-fearing woman. French-Canadian Catholic. Now do we understand why there's going to be a bunch of French words? After becoming pregnant for the 7th time, suspecting it was twins, boy were they in shock when she went into labor at 7 months. Her pregnancy was turbulent, as expected with someone pregnant with so many multiples. The main reason this was such a big deal was that they all survived. Like, survived in utero, at birth, as well as into adulthood. We have hindsight about their making it to adulthood, but just their successful birth was a wowza. Yeah. Dr. Alan Roy Defoe and two midwives, Aunt Donalda, I'm here for it, and Madame Annette LaBelle, assisted in the girls' birth. They were born May 28, 1934, at their family home in Calander, Ontario, Canada. I'm going to say Ontario, because I just can't even help it. Ontario males in California, that's literally all I can think about. Back to it. Identical baby girls. Together, the weight was 13 pounds and 6 ounces. That's like 2.7 pounds per baby, or like 1.2 kilograms. And I'm just like, whoa. They weren't measured separately, which I find to be absolutely fascinating. Just literally that. The girls were named Yvonne, Edwilda, Marie. That was rough. Annette, Lillian Marie. Cecile Marie, Imelda. Emile Marie, Jenna. And Marie Rain Alma Huli. My brain is just like slightly falling. Also, Huli might be actually a last name that might be her married name, and I just like wrote it up there because I hate myself. Moving on. Another thing to note, that after testing in 83, there were apparently 6 embryos, one which was terminated during development, probably about the 3rd month, according to the Britannica. As it goes, Emile and Marie shared an embryonic sac, as did Annette and Yvonne. Then there's Cecile, who likely shared it with embryo 6. In a basket, heated blankets by the stove. It really was hard to believe all these babies would survive. Being roughly 2 months premature, they're in a poor area to poor parents in the country, in a farm. They literally were in their family farmhouse. If you look up pictures, which I have posted on my Instagram, it's like pretty small. It's like shabby. It's shabby chic. Alzire, drained and ready to enjoy her babies, was just not, she was resisted, she was pushed back. She was not allowed to hold the girls, literally nothing, because the doctors feared how fragile they were, which I'm like, I read they were fed something called a 720 formula, which is cow's milk, boiled water, two spoonfuls of corn syrup, and a dash of rum. This, however, cannot be substantiated, although it makes for a really interesting antidote. Wow, I'm just like struggling for words. What time is it? It's 11:27 p.m. I have been awake since like 4:30 in the morning. So let's keep going. Let's keep going. Anecdote. Yes, I did it. Anyway, I looked up 720 formula just to see if I got any other hits, and nada. I got something about OG Coca-Cola recipe, so, you know, cocaine. And oddly enough, lots of hints of my fave, Star Trek, which is just, it's like the formula for civilization. You know, makes sense, but not quite what I was looking for. Although I really could talk about Star Trek anytime, because I really love Star Trek. Speaking of which, I just stuck a sticker of Star Trek on my bottle today. Feeling real snazzy about it. Back to it. This is actually, this next part is my favorite part of the entire story. Announcements are a thing. We don't do them so much anymore since we have things like social media. People just like, you know, I'm having a baby. I had a baby. We're engaged. Like, you don't need to take out an ad in the newspaper. Whenever I think of ads, I always think of Friends and that episode where they took out an ad for a wedding. Anyway, but Oliva's brother asked the paper if they would charge per baby or just for the announcement, noting that there were 5, you know, it was a single birth, so it was just like, hey, so you're gonna charge me per baby? Because, like, it was just, like, one birth, so, like, can it just be, like, one big announcement? Just be like, five babies, yay! And I just, like, it's so cute, so awkward. I would have probably been like, but this is actually how word got around. I'm actually not going to cut that yawn. I, like, paused it so I could finish yawning, and then I was just, like, I'm going to find that spot to cut it out. And I was like, you know what? We're friends, so you're going to hear me yawn, because I'm a little tired. What can I say? Just a little tired. That's how word got around, because of the ad. Because, you know, people can't keep their mouth shut. They're like, oh, dude, for sure. Yeah, no, it's just for one birth. Tell everyone we know. They received assistance left and right. And when I said that, I actually lifted the right hand, and I'm really excited about it. Incubators to help with development, supplies, even a letter from people identifying as, this one's hard for me, Appalachian? Yes, with advice for preventing diarrhea. It's burnt rye whiskey, in case you were wondering. But also, I'm just like, preventing diarrhea. I just, you know, I've grown up with a lot of kids, and I'm like, you're just gonna do it. Like, I don't know what to tell you. You're gonna shit on me, and I have to deal. And we're cool. We're, like, perfectly cool. I love telling the story about how, oh my god, you know what? Actually, we're friends, but we're not those kind of friends. We'll get there someday, and I'll tell you my poop story. I've got a few, but there's actually one big good poop story I have to tell you in the future. Anyway, shortly, we're gonna discuss the girls' lives, but I did just want to wrap up the family members before we do that, because yes, even after the first five, or I guess six, if we're to be more respectful over the one who passed, and the surprise five, the family added three more members. Three more. So in total, we are looking at 5, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, with 13 being living members at the time. And these three additional are Olivia Jr. in 1936, Victor in 1938, and Claude in 1946. Now, for where everything gets, like, so many things being awful in hindsight, but incubator babies were a thing. And I don't mean just like, oh, you know, preemie babies and we gotta stick them in the incubators, you know, or I guess in a more still kind of awful extreme, you know, someone's pregnant and they're on life support and they're like, just like keep them there so the baby survives, which I actually don't know if that is really something that happens or it's just a Grey's Anatomy thing, but like, I don't know, if we learned anything from the Sharon Tate case is that, you know, the baby survives in there for like 20 minutes or something. So, pretty cool stuff. Anyway, check out the 1933 through 34 World's Fair, where Dr. Martin Coney had living babies in incubators display. While I'm all here for the development and improvement of incubators and really just anything that's helping people, taking stigma away from children with disabilities or ailments is also obviously very important, and people being able to see these babies also just like a casual setting, I mean, you're in the World's Fair, is cool, but not so much the idea of just kids being on display for people's amusement. Like, it's one of those, like, a both, it's an ish again, where you're like, or a no, assholes here. I don't know. I don't love it, but I get it, and I'm here for it. But I'm also, like, here at a distance, like, across the street waving hello. But I'm not going to cross over and talk to you because we're not cool like that. This sort of thing, though, was around for decades around the world. The Smithsonian explained radios, calling it frivolous sideshow spectacle, but that is an invaluable medical faculty. And that makes perfect sense. Like, that's literally what it is. It's like, I mean, I don't want to get into it, but like, when you think of certain vaccines we have, like polio, and like, you look at the history, or what penicillin and stuff, and you're just like, oh my gosh, that's how you did it? What the heck? Like, someone let you what is happening? But then you're like thankful you have these things. You're thankful you have penicillin. I'm thankful to have like the polio vaccine and like all those things. And you just, but you have to kind of live with the guilt of knowing where it came from. And it's really gross and icky. And honestly, I'm gonna start crying. Moving on. This was to be the Dion quintuplets future, though. This like child display, look at me now, and all this. The girls were days old when they were approached to be displayed at the Chicago Century of Progress exhibition. Dr. Defoe agreed it would be a great idea. He delivered them, after all, so he knew best. So the family reluctantly agreed, and I have to press reluctantly because they did back out. But it was too late. They were being attacked by forces much longer than impoverished farmers could handle. With the help of Ontario attorneys, a compromise was made. Roughly July 27, the family gave custody to the Red Cross, a deal for 2 years. They would support the Quints because the family just really couldn't. I mean, that's five additional babies, and these are premature babies, babies with medical issues. Baby, they just didn't know. They couldn't. September 1934, Dr. Defoe and the Red Cross got a little hospital set up across the way from the Dion family home where the girls were kept. A hospital for them. Boy needs a daddy. False. In this case, girls need a doctor and medical staff and supplies and blah, blah, blah. The family, not so much enjoying how little autonomy they were getting over their girls, couldn't really say much because the babies were so small and in need after all. September, they were gone from the home. The family was essentially split from here. Limited contact despite living across the street. No alone time between mom, dad, and children. This flustered the situation further. Elsier apparently was quite aggressive with the people at the hospital because she hated how unmotherly it all made her feel. February 1935, the family left on the farm and went on a little trip to Chicago. They were parents of the world's famous babies. This, unfortunately, was the perfect ammunition for the government, or really the Premier of Ontario, Mitchell Hepburn, to accuse the family of exploitation and extend the guardianship. So, like, it was going to be 2 years just so the girls could get all the medical help they needed, and now it's not 2 years. Instead of 2 years, it was becoming indefinite. When would the girls rejoin their family? Before this, the girls had so many guardians. Their dad, well, he kind of had guardianship. Dr. Defoe, Joseph Vallon, and the Minister of Welfare, David Kroll. March 1935, the Dion Quintuplets Act went through, and the girls became wards of the Crown until they became of age, 18. The real kicker is, to reiterate, Canada took away parental rights because they feared exploitation, but that then they exploited them. I couldn't even make that flow as a sentence. I was just like, they exploited them. There was mass public interest in these girls, as the parents saw with their little tour. So Canada, in a very un-21st century Canada kind of way, made them a show. Like, when I think of Canada, I'm always just like, yes, Canada, Canada. Like, if I have to go back to North America, you bet your, I'm gonna say shiny butt again, you're shiny behind. I want to go to Canada. But this Canada's a little, excuse me, Justin Trudeau, you need to sit your people down. I know you weren't born yet, but we need to talk about this. And let me also explain that they were already a show. In this special hospital they lived in, there was a playground designed to be viewed and observed. Not inherently so that the doctors could observe, which still feels a little unnecessary to be honest, but it was for public viewing. They are talking like one-way glass so they could be gawked at. I read so many articles about the girls. This included archives and earlier stuff from the early 2000s, detailed accounts of how the girls were exploited. They were constantly paraded around for profit and entertainment. Nothing inherently awful, I suppose, or at least that I could see, but these kids were used for everything. Random tests for literally anything. I mean, they wanted to figure out why they survived, why their family just naturally popped out five kids. Like, yeah, I'm here for the question marks, you know. 1937, Time Magazine. They graced the cover. Syrup advertisements featuring them and their doctor, toothpaste, cars, food, memorabilia sold by their parents even after they lost custody. And of course, the same stuff was sold at the Quintland Zoo. The girls... The Quintland. That's the hospital they were kept. Oh my God, it exacerbates me so much. Literally, it was reported that the girls said doctor before mother, which I mean, I know people, they usually say like dada before like mama. So mother, doctor, like I guess it's easier. I don't know. But like bro, it's just like, bro, over 6,000 visitors a day, all for a human zoo. It's just, a plus, if you can call it that. I mean, we're going back to the, like, doing good things with bad things kind of a doodad. Was that the revenue that was used, or that was gained through their popularity, was used to make the country better. $500 million Canadian for new roads, highways, electricity, grids, pipes, phone lines, you literally name it. It's all because of these girls. You know, the world's fascination with them brought in, again, $500 million Canadian. And that was used to care for them, but that's not how much it costs to take care of kids. So that was all put out into the world. I have to be completely honest, I'd have to look down at my source again, but I don't believe that is accounting inflation, that's like $500 million Canadian. Oh, gee. So like, I don't even want to try to do the math to see what that is today. But everything in general was very well documented. Their first perms, 1942. First communion in 1940. Galleries surrounding their every day. Their life was run by nurses who kept them on a very strict schedule. 30 minutes for breakfast, morning hair curling, concoctions for I'm not really sure what. They were educated by tutors, which sounds great, but they were a spectacle for all to see. 30-minute increments of enjoyment and daily doctor's visits. While their activities did vary from month to month, the timetable stood still. I actually want to talk about the souvenirs again because apparently there were fertility stones. What I love most about this is that it reminds me of Star Trek Voyager and how hard they tried to be woke by having a diverse cast, but having no one there to vouch for their ethnic explorations. Just for a brief explanation, one of the characters is Indigenous American, played by a Hispanic Indigenous gentleman, but they would give him the randomest native-y things to parade around with. Aztec stuff one day and the next something else. Like, this stone will give you five babies. And I just, like, literally love it because it's just, again, what I first thought of. It just reminds me of so many things. What's that newer Netflix show, Dead to Me, and how one character stole a rock and the other character thinks that is why they're having fertility issues. And it's just like, it's very interesting and I love it. And I'm totally the kind of person that'd be like, cool, give me that rock. Like, I'm not gonna, someone else touch it. Like, I don't want to touch it because I don't want a kid right now. But like, that's, I don't know. I'm like, cool. Yeah, I have a Pope Francis trading card. Like, I don't stray from the strange. As you guys can see, I'm still pretty tired. I can't wait to edit this tomorrow because I'm just going to be like, what is happening? Who is this? Oh my God, are those new glasses? Anyway, this episode isn't going to have a designated media section because, like, this entire thing is media, you know? The Dion gals did a little acting when they were 2 and 4, some documentaries, but nothing too wild. The girls were, return to their family in 1939, so not when they were 18, but when Dr. Defoe honestly got pressured into it. They looked pretty fraudy and messed up for keeping guardianship when the parents had proven no harm, but the doctors had demonstrated some exploitation, so they really didn't have anything. Like, the public was just like, excuse me, are you taking away parental rights from this, like, good Catholic family? Like, I don't understand what you're doing. And I'm just like really here for this. But anyway, now we get into more facts. 42. The entire family moved into the facility because their new family home was being built. And by family home, I mean a mega meta home from all the magic quintuplet funds. And during this time, while the funds were being earned, the girls kept being exploited, but now by their parents, you know, firsthand, not just the little souvenirs, but like them. They had to do a lot of chores, something that they were not accustomed to. You know, they had all these people in the facility, they ain't gonna do much. And they were still being separated from the family, so they could keep being viewed. They all lived in the same home when the girls were age 8, but they were not part of the family. November 1943, the 20-room mansion had all the glitz. Phones, electricity, hot water, bathrooms, although real talk, I was fixated on how many bathrooms. Like, I didn't find a straight answer, but I googled it intensely because I have like a really weird thing. Not weird, I guess it's a pretty reasonable thing with bathrooms. I want there to be as many bathrooms as there are rooms. Like, I just like, I want every person to have a place for their butt to feel safe. Like, in my home, me and my partner use it different. We have 2.5 bathrooms for 2 people, and let me tell you about how I love being able to poop in mine and not have to deal with his poop. And I have said poop way too many times. I'm really sorry. Moving on. I want to say at least 5, though. Like, it's an older home, but also, like, plumbing of the sort was newer, so, like, I have no idea. I'm just going to roll with 5 because it makes me feel okay. But again, oh my god, here we go yawning again. We're so close now. You practically live with me. I want more bathrooms and rooms in a house. And I know I gotta clean them, but I just like hate sharing when I pooty. I wrote poop, I'm sorry. Wow, I already said it. I didn't read ahead. I just like thunk ahead because right here it's like, we have 2.5 toilets for 2 adults. Oh my gosh. My house is really trashy. I have older poop shelf German toilets. Like, Google it. I really have to insist you do. It's funny. It's not gross. Well, it's gross when you live with it. But I'm just so glad I get to poop at least in my own sad toilet because they're really weird. It's literally like the pot where your butt is at is just a shelf, like a little shelf that's got a shallower spot that water sits at, and of course it's like super disgusting, and then it just like drops into a hole, but it's really hard to actually do it in the hole part. It always falls on the shelf, and you can check to see if you need more fiber, I guess. There is a lot of back and forth on why there was segregation with a family. They still treated them as a money unit. They traveled and performed, so they never integrated. The real issue is not integration, though, it is inclusion. You can share a space and still have segregation, and that's just like a very important thing to know. It's really anywhere. But once 18, they left, fed up with the constant exploitation and neglect. They were to forge their own path. 1954, Amelie died. A seizure caused her to roll onto a pillow and suffocate. She was 20. Her independence led to a dedication to the church, and her intention was to become a nun. Marie married and had 2 daughters. She died in February 1970, alone after her husband had left. Her obituary archive from the New York Times states she passed from a brief illness, but I'm I cannot substantiate that further. She was 35 years old. She was found in her home after days of no communication by a doctor who, I guess, did like a wellness check. Annette married and had three boys. She divorced her spouse in the 90s. Cecile married and had five kids, three boys, two girls, although one died in infancy. She, too, divorced her husband in the 90s. Yvonne became a nurse, turned sculptor, turned librarian, and she died June 23, 2001, at age 67. The two remaining sisters lived together in Canada and warn others about their struggles. Finance issues due to their interests not being cared for, their lost identities, broken families. A lot of what you can find that is more recent it's just sad. It really is. It discusses the need of money despite how much they made for Ontario. They won some money from Ontario in 1998, $2.8 million between the three, but you also have to remember how much they made $500 million, and they got $2.8 to split between three of them, which sounds pretty good, but it's just, I also don't know what kind of debt they were in and what kind of lifestyles they had, and while, especially as like someone who's like, I'm like chilling lower middle class, I guess, or middle class. I can't imagine being like, this is not enough money to live my lifestyle. But that is a struggle some people have, so I guess I won't judge it too much. In 1995, the girls opened up about their experiences that they had once they were living with their parents. There was mention of sexual abuse from their father. Yvonne, Cecile, and Annette did attend their mother's funeral in November 1986 when she passed at age 77, but even so, they remained estranged from their family as a whole. Overall, it's hard. There are museums about them and pop culture references in old films, but overall, they have been forgotten, and the issues of a human zoo seem to have just been swept away. I'm not here to argue if they deserve more money inherently. Like, that's, I don't know. Sure not. I'm not here to argue that. And everything is easier to judge in hindsight, but it is not like this treatment and exploitation of children has stopped. That is why they released an open letter in 1997 to the McCoy family after they welcomed septuplets. Dear Bobby and Kenny, if we emerge momentarily from the privacy we have sought all of our adult lives, it is only to send a message to the McCoy family. We three would like you to know we feel a natural affinity and tenderness for your children. We hope your children receive more respect than we did. Their fate should be no different from that of other children. Multiple births should not be confused with entertainment, nor should they be an opportunity to sell products. Our lives have been ruined by the exploitation we suffered at the hands of the government of Ontario, our place of birth. We were displayed as a curiosity three times a day for millions of tourists. To this day, we receive letters from all over the world. To all those who have expressed their support in light of the abuse we have endured, we say thank you. And to those who would seek to exploit the growing fame of these children, we say beware. We sincerely hope a lesson will be learned from examining how our lives were forever altered by our childhood experience. If this letter changes the course of events for these newborns, then perhaps our lives will have served a higher purpose. Sincerely, Annette, Cecile, and Yvonne Dion. Also, because I'm condescending and a little tired, that's seven babies they had. That's seven septuplets, like, just in case we forgot. The first set of septuplets to survive, which is not something I had been very well aware of before reading through this. The closing thoughts are going to be probably the same as they usually are. I feel like sometimes I'm more dramatic than I need to be. But I remember watching John and Kate Plus 8. And I saw a commercial recently about another, I don't know if it's TLC, but similar, where this family has like 11 children. And I get the entertainment. Like, I'm very, I love trash reality TV. I am here for it. But I also just can't help but feel icky. And I feel worried for the children, for the family. I just feel unsafe for them. I know it's not my place. I know it's not my job. That's just how I feel. And I feel even more so that way after learning about these women. No one died here. This wasn't one of those where we go into the details of someone's death or anything, but I think it's important. Initially, when I started my podcast, I sought to give more of what I liked. You know, I really enjoyed true crime podcasts, and as I started delving deeper into more true crime podcasts outside of the two or three that I would listen to, I found other things that I really enjoyed that still had something to do with like creepier things, but not limited in just missing people and dead people. And part of my interest was just my fascination and love of cinema. And while this doesn't inherently have anything to do with films, it is also just like a human issue. It's something that required some civic engagement, which is something I'm also pretty obsessed with. This one was not that tough to swallow. This one wasn't hard to have very specific feelings about. I mean, I pretty much laid it open right at the beginning. You need to protect your kids. I know that a lot of parents especially don't like to hear anything from someone who doesn't have kids, but it doesn't take having kids to understand how to A, respect kids, and 2, just care, you know? They are autonomous people, and they're going to remember things. They're going to hold things back. What is this? Hold grudges, I guess. Yeah. What is it? The axe forgets, but the wood never dies. And I know that from experience. You just don't forget. And I'm sure many of us have had instances where we mention it to our parents or friends, whatever, and they just don't remember because they weren't the ones being hurt. And it's just like not a big deal for everyone else. And it's just a please be mindful of privacy. And while I understand being excited and happy and wanting to just share your happiness, you have to be very careful about those kind of things. These women went through all this before social media, before the internet. Now we have a means of getting all of this information in a matter of seconds, which means that the risks are so much higher. So just always be considerate of what your kids will remember about their experiences in the future. It's not always going to be everything you want them to have remembered. They will just remember whatever it is they remember. If you can find it in your heart to please go to Apple Podcasts and leave me a review. I think you can also do it in like Stitcher, but just, you know, wherever. But I know that Apple Podcasts is the big one, and that would be so, like, so nice of you. Thank you. As always, thank you very much for listening. And if you are ever so inclined, please follow me on Instagram at pardonmyenthusiasm.podcast, Facebook at pardonmyenthusiasm.podcast, and Twitter at pardonmepod. Bye.